chapter 1. First Peter chapter 1. We're going to look at a word this morning that's not often talked about, but it's nevertheless it's a very important word. So 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to God's elect, strangers in the world, scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, who have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, through the sanctifying work of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ, and the sprinkling by his blood. Now also turn to 1 Peter 2:11. We're going to find this same word here. 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Okay, the word I'm focusing on today is strangers. Okay? Strangers. Should you think about that for a minute? What does it really mean to be a stranger here? Okay? I'm going to give you two examples that have happened in my life where I definitely felt like I was a stranger. Okay? The first one happened to me when I was working at TRW Berkeley. I had a friend, an Indian friend. His name was Dalbert Pahal. We were very good friends, actually. And I was invited to his wedding. Was, I think, somewhere in Central California where I went to his wedding. And I didn't realize that to Indian people, weddings are very important. I mean, everybody comes to when the Indians get married, everybody under the sun comes to the wedding. So I went to this wedding. There was about 600 people there, right? And I, 600 Indian people, I was the only Caucasian there. So, and you know, they had Indian food, some Indian food I really liked. They had this chicken. It had a number associated with it. I can't remember if it was chicken 59 or chicken 47, but I thought that seems weird that you'd name a chicken after a number. This, can't you call it like roasted red chicken or red roasted? Because it was red. It was bright red chicken. And I don't know why it was so bright red, but it was had a chicken and then a number to it. The food was good. I did okay, right? Because I'm an extrovert, right? I mean, put me in a room with 10 people, and in about 10 minutes, none of them are strangers to me anymore, right? Because I'm really good at meeting people and talking to people and connecting with people. That's one of my strengths. But nevertheless, I still felt like a stranger there. They had a lot of people wore the traditional Indian formal attire, right? I had on nice clothes, but I didn't have any. Nevertheless, I felt like a stranger. And like I said, it really didn't bother me probably as much as most people would have bothered him, because I still managed to have a good time and spend some time talking, you know, to the groom. But still, I felt like a stranger. That's the first occurrence. Think about that. Second occurrence, I'm a little boy. In the Philippines, I grew up overseas. During the Vietnam War, my family lived in the Philippines for 5 years, and so I sort of grew up there. My dad wanted to do a lot of mission work while we lived there, so we went with some of the missionaries to some of the remote cities in the Philippines. And at that point in time, a lot of people may have seen Caucasians before, but they'd never seen Caucasian kids before. Right, so we went to the name of the town was Cabana Tuan. There's actually a movie made about it because that was one of the famous prisoner of war camps in the Philippines during World War II. And so we get there and we're visiting the church there, and we're walking around, and they'd never seen Caucasian kids before. They'd just seen some, you know, men probably, and they're following us. I mean, we're walking here, and there's like 50 people following us. Just kind of looking, you know, what's this all about? Then, you know, somebody comes up and kind of touches my hair a little bit, and, you know, that didn't bother me at all. But we were strangers, right? We were strangers there. We weren't, it wasn't that we weren't welcome. We were just strangers. And, you know, the funny thing is, we just found this out at Thanksgiving this year. I got my Bible from when I was a little boy back my mom had it, and it was stored away. I got it. And in the front of that Bible is a stamp from the Kabetuan Church of Christ. I guess that church, when you visited, they wanted to stamp the front of your Bible. So they stamped the front of my Bible. So there in my little my Bible when I was a young boy is a stamp from the Kabanatuan Church of Christ. I remember that so well. I was a stranger, right? I didn't know the customs. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I didn't know the language. So these two examples that I'm giving you is kind of how I want you to think about strangers. But it doesn't stop there, okay? There's sort of two sides to the coin, right? When we looked at those two passages in 1 Peter about being strangers, there's a flip side to the coin of being a stranger, okay? I've described one side of the coin. Now I'm going to describe the other side of the coin, okay? In being strangers in this world, like it asks us to do in 1 Peter, it also implies something else. It implies that we are set apart, right? And then in God's eyes, when we act like a stranger, when we behave like Christians should, we're distinctive in nature. Distinctive is a positive word. It can be spun to be completely a positive word because that means distinct, special. As strangers, we are distinct and we're special. What do I mean by that? Turn to 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. First Peter 2 and verse 9. This is a part of what your distinctiveness of being a stranger in this world is. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Okay, so let's combine all this together. We're talking about being strangers here in this world, that we're supposed to be strangers. We've talked about how it can make you feel out of sorts, out of different, very different. But it can also, the flip side of the coin is, it makes you special to God. In fact, it could be argued the more of a stranger you are to this world, the more special you are to God. Let's look at some verses to firm that up. Okay, let's look at Romans 8, 16 and 17. Romans 8, 16 and 17. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God, co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his suffering in order that we may also share in his glory. We are children of God. We're heirs of God. Now one day, I'm going to be gone. And all of my possessions are either going to go to my wife, if she's not gone yet, or to my daughter. They're going to be my heirs. They're going to get what I have. So this is a very special way to be identified as a children of God. Okay? Now let's look at another one. Let's look at 2 Corinthians 2:15. These are all very, very unique ways to look at your distinctiveness in God by being a stranger to the world. 2 Corinthians 2:15. For we are to God the aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. The aroma of Christ. Now, growing up, my mom was a good cook. And I tell you what, I sure enjoyed aroma when she was cooking in the kitchen. Oh, I tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, I was enjoying the meal before I ever sat down to eat it because I was getting to enjoy the aroma first, right? The aroma of Christ. Right? Christ is God's Son. So how distinctive and special does that make you as Christians, as strangers in the world, to be the aroma of Christ? That's a distinction. It's very powerful. Okay, now let's look at another one. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 20. 2 Corinthians 5, verse, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. Your ambassador, Christ's ambassador, we are here on behalf of him. That right there makes you special, but it also means that there's a responsibility assigned in that, right? Because ambassadors, you're representing. When you go to ambassador in a country, if I go to be the ambassador of France, I'm representing the United States in Christ, in France's eyes, right? There's a responsibility that goes with being an ambassador of Christ. But nevertheless, when you're described as an ambassador of Christ, when you're described as having the aroma of Christ, when you're described as being a child of God, you, my friend, are distinctive and special. Let that wash over you. Distinctive, special. Okay? Now let's look at this verse. I'm going to give you some time to look this one up. Zephaniah 3:17. Zephaniah 3:17. This is a verse that many of you have probably never seen before, and it's so incredibly tender. Zephaniah 3:17. If you were to look at my Bible, you could tell the books that I study and the books I don't study. I have to admit something to you. I hardly ever study minor prophets. So I can even have struggles sometimes finding some of the minor prophet books when I'm looking them up. And you can tell that by looking at my Bible. There's not a lot of highlighting and notes in my minor prophets. But this is such an incredibly beautiful verse. It said, the Lord your God is with you. He's mighty to save. He will take great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing. Quiet you with his love and rejoice over you. Is that one of the most tender verses you'll ever read about God right there? That's it. That's the Everest of God's tenderness shown in that verse right there. How he comforts us, especially when we need him the most. I've always felt at times in my life, when I lost my mom, when I lost my dad, when I lost, you know, my sister, I felt a special bond, like there was something like this going on, comforting me, taking care of me, because he knew I was going through it, right? We've all gone through it, and I got news for you. If you haven't gone through it, you will go through it eventually, of some very hard times, right? And finally, the last one I want to look at is 1 John 3 and verse 1. 1 John 3 and verse 1. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. That is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Look at that. Love lavished on us. What a word to put there. Lavished. Okay? What does lavish mean? Okay. When me and Karen were first dating, right, I had a chance to spend Christmas with her family. Right? And boy, was I lavished upon. Okay? They must have known something looked good or was going to work out or something. They must have given me about $300 worth of gifts. And I wasn't even married to her yet. I felt so lavish that day. Like, I mean, my parents did Christmas, but they didn't do that kind of stuff. It would be, you know, $40 gift, $50 gift. But it was just so amazing. The surprise of it just, and immediately it made me have this nice warm feeling for her parents. And I will tell you this, I have one thing going for myself. I had the best mother-in-law in the world. How many times have you ever heard anybody say that? Everybody's always making fun of their mother-in-law. Not me, my friend. I had a good one. I had a really good mother-in-law. She was terrific to me. Yep. she was terrific to me, and she was so kind-hearted and serves like she had such a servant's heart. I loved her so much. All of these things I've just listed have one reason. I want you to feel like as a stranger in the world, the bad side of the coin, you are also distinctive in the world with regards to how God looks at your life. You understand what I'm saying? And it could even be argued that the more of a stranger you are in this world, the more distinctive and precious you are to God. Right? Special, set apart, children of God, lavished upon, all of these things. Singing when you need Him the most, when you have a burden. Singing over you, comforting you. It's an amazing thing to think about, okay? So we use this word strangers, but what are we really talking about here? Okay. First one we want to look at is 1 Peter 1 and verse 8. Though you have not seen Him, you love Him. Even though you do not see Him now, you believe in Him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. Okay? We are strangers here in the way that we have a faith in something that is not seen. We are special. We are strangers here with regards to that. Anymore, you see two of the things. You see people that can't believe in anything they can't see or touch or taste, or people that don't believe in any truth. Everybody's got their own truth. But for the Christian who lives a life of truth, right, we believe strongly in something by faith that we did not have a chance to see. But let me ask you something here. Did the disciples get to spend 3 years with Christ? Yes, walk with Him, people raised from the dead, calming of the storm, lepers healed, all of this stuff. They saw this, and even at times their faith wavered, especially before the day of Pentecost. Their faith wavered, right? I mean, Peter, after his denial, felt so dejected, he was well on his way just to go back to fishing. He was not going to be a part of the effort anymore. Christ went and restored him. Right? Had to go. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Right? So, there's no guarantee that even if you'd seen these miracles that you would have faith. Peter's faith wavered when he denied Christ. Thomas's faith. Thomas had to see the holes, right? In his side and in his hand. He'd seen the miracles. Yet he needed to see that to have faith. Just because you didn't see Christ doesn't mean you can't have a strong faith in Christ, okay? That is what makes you so distinctive and, again, what makes you such a stranger here, okay? All right, now let's look at the next one. Another thing that makes you a stranger is that we live peacefully in our world. 1 Peter 1:13-16. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Be self-controlled. Set your hope fully on the grace to be given you when Jesus Christ is revealed. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as He who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, "Be holy because I am holy." Christians should be some of the most peaceful people on the planet, okay? I see in my world right now, especially post-COVID, walking and talking powder kegs. People that have so much anger built up, and I'm not talking about Christians, but just the world that we live in. People that just one funny look or one phony word or one thing, something you do in your car even, right? oh, you cut me off, or what are you doing? You know, it was my turn to go. Or we can't be like that, folks. We have to be so peaceful in this world. There's no excuse to be like that, okay? We need to have a flavor and a taste to the world that's peaceful, right? Theoretically, Christians should be some of the best citizens on the planet, okay? We're peaceful. We like to follow, as long as it's not unbiblical, we like to follow what our leaders want us to do, right? Okay, so that's one thing. We're strangers in the way that we're peaceful, okay? Next thing is 1 Peter 2 and verse 1. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, evil, slander of every kind, like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. So we are, as strangers here, we have different cravings. All of the cravings that we seek to have should be good cravings. Okay? Now, the mind is, to me, the penultimate creation that God did, the mind, the human mind. It is full of memories. It is full of capability. It is full of emotion. So much so, there was a quote written years ago, that the human mind is far too complicated for the human mind to understand it. What sits between your ears is the crowning achievement of God, I believe. But you have to be careful what you feed it. You have got to be careful what you feed it. Okay? Turn to Romans 12 and verse 1. Romans 12 and verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Here you have a statement, renewing of your mind. What are you letting into your mind? Right? What are you thinking about? Right? It's very important what you're pondering, what you're thinking about, okay? What you're focusing on. What you're focused on is going to determine a lot of things, right? If you're searching for riches, your mind is going to be renewed by wanting to be searching for riches all the time. And that may not be the best thing to have in your mind all the time, okay? Because you're always going to be focusing on that and, you know, what can I do? What can I do to make more money? That's not the best thing in the world to be focused on all the time, okay? Searching for things that are unsavory spiritually is not a good thing to be focusing on either. Right? And we're surrounded by a world that's full of this. I tell you what, if you go to Las Vegas, you can't even look at the billboards. You cannot even look at the billboards. There's some dancing girl there in what somebody thinks is clothing. Certainly I don't think that's clothing, right? We're just bombarded by this. You're bombarded on TV, by the internet. You go to Walmart, and is that a good way to dress in public? I don't know so much about that, okay? So we are bombarded by this. You cannot yield. You cannot yield even a little bit because this stuff will just seep right into your mind. It just gets right up in there, okay? We have to be careful when we renew our mind, right? Romans 12, verse 1 and 2. What are you going to renew your mind with? You see, you can't just simply create a vacuum in your brain. Every brain will want to be focused on something because that's what it's made to do. Focusing on this, focusing on that. What are you focusing on, right? That's why you need scripture. That's why you need prayer. That's why you need Bible classes. That's why you need worship, right? To have a way to renew your mind every week, to keep you on track, so that you can think about the things that we should be thinking about. Here's the positive side to this. Searching for God is a good renewal of the mind, right? Searching for God, wanting to know more about God. Searching for how you can better be a lover of people, right? We're called to love people. It's a good mind shift as well, right? How are we going about loving people? Especially within these four walls, right? As family here. It means so much to me that you, all of you, are my family, right? You're special to me. You're different to me. I treat you differently because you are family to me. Every one of you I treat as family. If I kid you, I kid my family, right? If I joke with you, I joke with my family. I hug on you. I talk to you. I try to inspire you because you're my family. Okay. Searching for a way to share the gospel with the unbelief is a good way to focus your mind. What are your opportunities? What are your chances? What things can you do to spread the word? That's a good thing, okay? Now, sometimes when I make steaks at home, I marinate the meat before I put it on the grill. It's a nice marinade mixture that you mix with vinegar and olive oil in a packet that you pour in, and I let the steak sit in that mixture there to marinate the steak. Steak, it gets into the steak and it adds a nice flavor to the steak. What you choose to ponder on a daily basis is marinating your mind. Is your thoughts about God? Is your thoughts about loving people? Or is your thoughts about how can I make more money? I wish I had my neighbor's car. Look at that person's clothes. I wish I had those clothes. You see how what you choose to marinate your mind on is going to determine your destiny with regards to your mind. And your destiny is your mind. Okay, what's going to happen to you in the future is going to be how you marinate your mind every day, right? Marinate it on good stuff, okay? The second way we choose to live as strangers is in 1 Peter 2:11. 1 Peter 2 and verse 11. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify your God on the day he visits us. We're in a war, okay? Now, when soldiers are on the battlefield, they have to have something known as situational awareness, right? You have to be trained. You have to be good to stay alive on the battlefield, right? How are you maintaining your weapon? How are you good at keeping your head down? Are you dumb enough to smoke a cigarette at night when the enemy can see the cigarette and blow your head off, right? Just stuff like that, right? Just, you know, how good are you digging your foxhole, right? This is a battlefield when soldiers are on a battlefield. You, my friend, sit on a spiritual battlefield. And we, in keeping with that battlefield, we ourselves have to have situational awareness about what goes on in our lives, what we see in our lives. So we need to be very careful as we live on this world, because we know two things about Satan. He has a scheme to destroy you. That's scary. A scheme. He has a plan to destroy you, to take you down. And number two, he is a roaring lion seeking who he may devour. Think about those two things. That's what we have to keep our minds on the battlefield. I don't know if this is just as I've gotten older or not, but I see his work in the world sometimes. When I see something, I go, boy, he really got a foothold there. He got a foothold into that, and now he's ripping it and tearing it up, right? So just something to think about, okay? So in fighting this spiritual war, I'm going to give you a heads up. This year, you're going to be challenged spiritually to grow our congregation. We have a lot of stuff in the works that we're going to be doing this year. 2023 will not be a status quo year. It won't be business as usual. There's going to be a lot of programs going on that we're going to look to help grow our church. We're currently assessing a program. I'm going to be flying out January 8th to Texas to watch and see and witness a program that we're thinking about using here that's had great successes in other churches of Christ to help them grow. Okay? I don't want to bring anything into our congregation unless I've researched it thoroughly. Okay? Because I want to know, I want to see what it is. I want to know how can it help us specifically? Will this work here? And I want to find those things out. If it looks like it will be something that will help us here. Mark McLean is actually the one that told me about it. And I started researching it and looking into it. And we're going to be looking to do something like that this year. If not this, then maybe something else. Okay? But whatever it is, it will be biblical. Okay? Above all else, any program that's used in the church has to be biblical. So that just want to throw that out there. So let me ask you something. There's two kinds of people in this room right now. There are people that react to the word challenged in a positive way. And there are people that react to the word challenged and it's a negative thing. Challenged. That's not a negative word. What about you? If I say, I'm going to challenge you this year. Is that something you say? Are you one of those kind of people who say, challenge me? Let's get cooking. Let's do it. Let's have at it. Let's start. And then there's other ones that will be challenged, and they'll seek to crawl under the pew and hope that they weren't seen in this challenge, right? I'm going to hide. I'm going to get over here, and nobody's going to even see me. I don't want to be challenged. I just want to do whatever's been going on. We can't be like that. Okay, we got to be challenged. We've got to be strong and ready to respond. Okay? And finally, 1 Peter 5 and verse 6 is the last way we're strangers. 1 Peter 5 and verse 6 says, humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand that he may lift you up in due time. Okay, so as strangers here, we're humble people, right? That can be something very hard to work on directly. It's kind of an indirect trait that you get from the way that you love people, the way that you serve people. It kind of comes automatically once you understand the framework of how we're supposed to deal with people and how important each and every person is. Humble yourselves, okay? One way that you can do this is live in a way that you cling to God and feel that everything you have in your life that is good is a blessing that comes directly from him. Okay? In a way, you could say the following. I feel so blessed to have fill in the blank in my life. Okay? You could put any number of things there. Season your mind and your thoughts with these words that you feel so blessed to have this in your life. And I'm going to give you an example of that in a minute. I want you to know that as fellow Christians, we have been so blessed with our spiritual heritage, okay? To be in a congregation that tries to follow the Bible in everything we do, okay? That loves one another. But I'm going to make this very personal this morning. I'm going to give you my I feel so blessed to have list, okay? Number one, I feel blessed to live in a country with freedom of religion. Right? You should feel blessed, right? Blessed beyond measure, right? Number two, I have lived my entire life in the church from the time I left the womb. My parents were Christians. They brought us to church. I can never remember asking my father once on Wednesday night if we were going to be going to church. It was automatic. Why would you even ask that? Of course we're going to church. It's Wednesday night. We go to church, right? such a rich spiritual heritage from my family from the time I was a newborn. Here's another thing. I'm very blessed beyond all measure. I have been part of a strong biblical congregation my entire life and have never personally witnessed a split congregation. I've never had to witness that. I'm so happy for that. That would just tear me to pieces to see a congregation split like that. I'm also very blessed beyond measure because I've had very godly parents growing up that brought me up in the church. I have such strong memories of going to Bible class when I was a little kid. Now, some of you have heard this story before, but about half of you haven't. I went to Bible class. I still remember her name. Her name was Sister Helen. She taught the Bible class. And she would ask questions of us to see if we were getting the lesson. And I was answering all the questions, right? I'll raise my hand. Answering all the questions. And she finally said, "Tommy Earl, would you please let other people answer the questions too?" And I said, "Teacher, I've got brains I haven't even used yet." And I was like 6 years old when I said that. "Teacher, I've got brains that I haven't even used yet." She remembered that to her grave, that I said that. We would go back there once we were married. She told my wife that. She remembered that to that day that I said that. It made such a strong impression on her that I said that. Vacation Bible school when I was a little kid. I remember Friday, the last day of Vacation Bible school, we always got popsicles. That last day, right? We got cookies the rest of the time, but Friday was popsicles. All of this rich spiritual heritage that I have coming out of the church, growing up in the church. Summer teen camps when I was growing up in the church. Right? We used to go to Quartz Mountain Christian Camp every year in Oklahoma, and it was so much fun. All the good memories there. All the good spiritual memories of that place. Every morning we would hike up on a mountain and have a devotional in the morning. It was called Quartz Mountain Christian Camp, and we would hike up in the morning and have a devotional kind of sitting on the hill. Kind of almost felt like the Sermon on the Mount type of a thing, but they had a devotional up there. It was really good. Here's another thing I'm very blessed with. I am privileged to get each Sunday together with some of my favorite people on the planet and worship God every time we get together, worshiping God. I'm blessed beyond measure to be able to do that. Here's another thing. I have been blessed with a godly wife and a wonderful daughter who are both strong followers of Christ. I am blessed beyond all measure with regards to that. Now, let me see if you can agree with this. Every time I use the word blessing, I'm redirecting the credit and love toward God. When you're constantly redirecting all of the good things in your life that you have, doesn't humility start to become automatic then? Because it's Him. It's Him. He does this. He's done this for me. He's given me these gifts, right? Humility is built into that. Gratitude and humility are intertwined, okay? So just think about that, okay? Keep that in there. Okay, but there's a flip side of not being a stranger here. Now, when I was preparing this lesson this week, something popped into my head. This does not come out of the Bible. This is just something that kind of popped out of my head, and I thought, when we live as strangers here properly, it means that one day when we're there, then we will not be a stranger. Because we're being groomed here to live successfully there, right? If we're humble, loving people that like to worship God, who appreciate all He's done for us, those people are going to slide into heaven very nicely. But what if you're not living as a stranger here? Maybe you're living like the world. Maybe you're doing things that are like the world. Maybe you have those bad cravings. Might you feel not like a stranger here, but if you did get there, you might feel like a stranger there. Because you have lived a life that is not worthy to be there. So even if you did make it there, you'd feel like a stranger there because you lived such a terrible life here. We're being groomed to be there with him. I don't think a lot of people realize that. This is not a, it's not a negative to be able to try to live like a Christian. You're being groomed to be there, right? One day you'll be there. Your grooming process has already begun. Your indoctrination, right? They call it, they've got the Navy boot camp and all that. Your indoctrination into heaven has already begun, right? You're baptized. Now you're learning to live like Christ, to have the aroma of Christ, have the gratitude for God. You're already being groomed for there. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. I don't want any of us in this room to feel like we would be strangers in heaven. We don't belong there. Right? Just something to keep in mind. That just popped into my head this week, and I thought I'd share that with you because it seemed a little bit profound. Okay? Now, there is a flip side of strangers, and that's a thing I would like to call naturalization, right? It's where we start to fit in with the world, where we're not distinct, where we're not different. The world has formed us in its image rather than God forming us in his image, right? Where instead of living for God, we choose to live like the world, right? We actually stop to feel like strangers here, and instead we fit right in. Well, I fit right in here, right? I'm doing what the world does. I have my fun. I have the same lifestyle as everybody else. That's a process I call naturalization, where you become to be like the world, and now you're living outside the realm, outside the fold of God when you do that, okay? You're no longer a stranger. You're no longer a stranger here. You feel entirely comfortable, right? And this is actually a little bit scary. Turn to Philippians 3 and verse 18. Philippians 3 and verse 18. For as I have often told you before and now say again with tears, many live as enemies of the cross of Christ. Living as an enemy of the cross of Christ. We can be enemies of Christ by the way we live our lives. And then the next one is Romans 5 and verse 10. Romans 5 and verse 10. For if, when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? So we do not want to be enemies of God. Above all else, you do not want to be an enemies of God, because that puts you in a very bad and awful situation. Okay? Okay. I want to ask you something right now. Many of you have seen the news. Something happened at a soccer tournament. I think it was 2 or 3 days ago. There was a guy who was kind of covering the soccer games for the U.S. who was joking around with somebody, and 4 minutes later, he was gone. Dead. Gone. I've found that as I've entered my life into my 60s, that I look at life a little bit more differently. It seems like as you get older, that more you hear more people just gone, right? Just gone. They didn't have. They may have had a heart attack, but they're gone. They didn't survive the heart attack, or they had a stroke and they're gone. Are you prepared for that? Right? You may think, well, I've still got quite a bit of my life ahead of me. You know, I'm young, and that guy was in his 40s. 4 minutes after telling somebody a joke, he dropped dead. He was gone. Our life here is frail, my friend. Much frailer than you think, right? Treasures in jars of clay. How rugged do you think a jar of clay is? We are so frail and could be gone so quickly, right? Always live your life to be prepared, okay? Things can happen, right? Things can happen. All right. So I want to end this with there was a book written years ago by Stephen Covey. It's called The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. One of the habits that he implored people to have is begin with the end in mind. As you start a task, as you do a task, what is the end of this going to look like? I need to plan at the beginning how I want this to end up. As you live your life as a Christian, as you search for your place in this world to be strangers in this world, right? Begin with your end in mind, because there will be an end. Let's not live in a state of denial, right? Unless the Lord returns, one day we're going to be in a box or an urn, right? But you know what? For the Christian, that's not a problem, right? In fact, for a Christian that's lived faithfully and lived as strangers here, death is not a bad thing at all, because we get to go and be with the Lord, right? We, as Christians, live a life that pulls the most important fear that we could possibly have out of our lives, the fear of death. Because one day when we die, we get to go and be with the Lord. And it's also wonderful for your family, because you've lived faithfully, and they know that if they live faithfully, they will get to see you again one day as well. So live your life faithfully. Live your life as a stranger. And never forget that there will be an end to this. One way or the other, there will be an end to this. Okay, thank you.